The new legislative session starts this week in Montpelier. Outgoing Governor Peter Shumlin delivered his farewell address at the Vermont State House on Wednesday. Here are his full remarks.
Thank you so much. I can't tell you what a wonderful moment this is to see all of you assembled here, ready to do great things for Vermont. I got to start by thanking, first of all, the love of my life, my rock for the last 6 years, your First Lady, Katie Hunt. Thank you for being here. Come on, stand up, take a bow. Thank you. And it seems like almost yesterday that I got sworn in. But with me at that time was my family, and I'm so proud to have them here today. My mom, my dad was here at the time. He's since passed away, but I know that he's looking down on us now with a combination of pride and, for God's sakes, hurry it up, Peter. My brother and sister, my niece and nephew, my girls would be here, but they're working today, making an honest living. To my many friends who are here, I've got to give a huge shout out to my fifth floor team, my cabinet, my secretaries, my folks who have worked so hard over the last 6 years to work for someone who's almost impossible in their demand for production. Team, you are the best team that any governor could ever dreamed of having. Stand up so that we can thank you. All of you. Everyone on Team Shumlin. You are the best. Thank you so much. I also want to recognize my friend, Governor-elect Phil Scott, who's going to deliver his inaugural address tomorrow. I've known Phil for a long, long time. We served together in the Senate for many years. He's been my lieutenant governor and our lieutenant governor for the last 6 years. He was a member of my cabinet. I believe it's the first time in a governor's history in Vermont that a lieutenant governor from the opposite party has served in the cabinet, but he did so with distinction. And I know that Phil cares deeply about this great state. He's a hard worker, and I know that he will serve our state honorably as Vermont's 82nd governor. Congratulations, Phil. And to those who, like me, won't be roaming the halls of this state house this year, my great friend, Speaker Shap Smith, my great friend, President Pro Tem, John Campbell, Attorney General Bill Sorrell, thank you for all that you've done. To the many Senate and House leaders who've contributed so much, I want to thank each of you for your service and your friendship. It's been an honor to work with you. And together, we have made Vermont a better place. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. And a word to all of you who will be roaming the great halls of the best state house in America, including incoming Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman, Attorney General T.J. Donovan, House Speaker Mitzi Johnson, and President Pro Tem Tim Ash. I did that job for 10 years, so have special sympathy in my heart for him. And I congratulate all of you on your victories and your hope for success in building on the progress that we've made over the past 6 years. As I look at the many new faces in this chamber, And I've got to say, you look more beautiful than ever. I remember fondly back to when I was one of them, right over there. And it was 30 years ago. I walked into the State House, a young representative from Putney and Westminster, now honorably served by Representatives Mawicki and Dean, with incredible energy, incredible hope, and incredible enthusiasm for Vermont's future. As I prepare to depart tomorrow, I leave with the same optimism, humbled, deeply humbled, and forever grateful to the faith that Vermonters have put in me. In part, that faith is rooted, like so many of you, in my personal experience. As my mom will freely tell anyone who asks and some who don't, as a dyslexic boy who struggled to learn how to read and still can't spell, thank you, spell check, I faced low expectations. In another state, I'm often well aware, I might have faced a very bleak and different future. In Vermont, I became governor. I came to this office shaped by that experience, knowing that many of us need a helping hand. Many of us need a second chance. 6 years ago, in the grip of a great recession, too many Vermonters needed both. Just before I came to office, Vermont had suffered a series of economic body blows, and it's easy to forget them. In the 3 years before I was elected, Vermonters lost nearly 10,000 jobs. That's 10,000 Vermonters who went home one day without a job. Unemployment had spiked, and incomes had stagnated. On day one, I inherited a budget that included a $178 million shortfall, with revenues, let's not forget that had plunged by $200 million. We were flying blind with no energy plan, we just didn't have one, to deal with the reality of the climate change that is well upon us. Our infrastructure was crumbling, with one quarter of the state's roads in very poor condition. Vermont was 45th in the nation for the number of structurally deficient bridges. Our state hospital was crumbling, I don't need to remind you, having been decertified by the federal government nearly a decade before, requiring Vermonters to pay $184 million in their hard-earned money that should have been paid for by the federal government, but our facility was too much of a dump. Over 30,000 Vermonters had no broadband internet service. I'm not talking about slow service. Talk to my mom. No broadband internet service. And far too many of our downtowns were falling further into decay. Our lowest paid workers had little hope of a real raise. And too many Vermonters with criminal records who had served their time, paid their price, were forced to check the box to all but certain permanent unemployment. Permanent. For too many Vermonters, they were homeless, and we lost too many of them to our cold winters. I'll never forget we lost two who froze in the streets in the first few months of my governorship. Vermont's prison population was increasing at such a rate that we were in danger of incarcerating more Vermonters than we were sending to pre-kindergarten. Bubbling just below the surface was a massive opiate crisis, feeding our incarceration problems and destroying the lives that you know all too well. Our education system had lost 20,000 students in two decades, but we refused as a state to adapt to that reality. Too many young Vermonters could not access quality early education, while too many others could not afford to get beyond high school. and we had tens of thousands of Vermonters living without health insurance. 6 years later, this state is a vastly different place thanks to our work together. Let's remember, when I ran for governor, I said that my top priority would be to grow jobs and economic opportunity to make this state more affordable. We've done that. We have done that. We added almost 16,000 jobs in the last 6 years. Our unemployment rate has fallen every year that I've had the privilege of being governor, every single year. And personal per capita incomes — this really matters when you talk about affordability — have grown faster than the national average for Vermonters for the first time in our history for the last 5 years in a row. That hasn't happened in Vermont's history. We've put Vermonters to work by connecting over 30,000 homes and businesses to broadband internet, cutting in half the number of failing roads and bridges in this state. That's a big deal. And we've rebuilt the Waterbury State Office Complex. As you know, it was the biggest construction project in the history of our state. We did it on time and on budget, and a new state-of-the-art mental health facility in Berlin, not to mention beds in Brattleboro and Rutland. On January 1st, Vermont's minimum wage increased for the third year in a row, and it's on its way to $10.50 an hour by next year, 2018. We've banned the box, and lower wage Vermonters no longer have to choose between going to work sick or losing their job. That's a big deal. Thank you. With so much fake news influencing our political dialogue, I have to take a moment to make sure that as you craft a budget for the next fiscal year, that we accurately recount the fiscal record that we have achieved together. Keep this number in mind, 3.7%. That's the average growth rate of Vermont's total funds budget over the past 6 years, 3.7%. That's in line with our state's economic growth. It's also far lower than the budget growth that preceded my time in office, 7.8% in 2004, 13.4% in 2005, and 7% in 2006. Our record of fiscal responsibility is one that we should all be proud of, and we did it while keeping the promise not to raise income tax rates, sales tax rates, rooms and meals tax rates on hardworking Vermonters because they're already too high. We not only balanced six consecutive budgets, but we did it while enhancing our bond rating and reducing our reliance on one-time funds for ongoing state expenses to zero for the first time in decades. We fully funded Vermont's pension obligations and our rainy day funds, and we're leaving an unprecedented $100 million cash reserve to help the Medicaid program whenever our economy hits a bumpy road, which we know it will. It's a big deal. Now, on energy, we've proven that state leadership can mean the difference between relying on yesterday's aging, leaking nuclear power plants or today's clean, local, renewable energy. Today, Vermont Yankee is shuttered. We have 12 times the number of solar panels and 25 times the amount of wind power, which I still say is the most efficient renewable available to us. And our utilities are transforming into cutting-edge energy efficiency companies. Working together, we've passed a groundbreaking renewable energy standard that can single-handedly achieve a quarter of the greenhouse gas emissions reductions needed to meet our state's 2050 target. And if you have 17 Vermonters in a room right now, 17 Vermonters in a room, or better yet, in a pub in one of our revived downtowns drinking a heady topper at the end of a long day's work, one of them is working in a renewable energy sector. That's where their job is. Vermont leads America in clean energy jobs per capita with over 17,700 of them. That's because of your hard work. To those that said if we did that, rates would go through the roof, I just want to point out today we enjoy the second lowest electric rates in New England. And the lowest residential rates for any of our neighbors, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and New York, were lower than all of them. That means money in Vermonters' pockets. Most importantly, Vermont finally adopted a smart statewide energy plan. And as we're moving on the path to 90% renewable by 2050, if other states would follow us, we might have some hope of preserving our planet for our kids and our grandkids. That's kind of a big deal. Let's keep it up. When I ran for governor, I had a simple idea. Let's become the early education state, giving every Vermonter, regardless of their income, their family circumstances, or how they learn, a strong start, and pay for it by not incarcerating nonviolent offenders suffering from addiction. Everyone loved the education idea, but the skeptics pounced on my criminal justice reform proposals, as you may well recall. When I made that campaign promise, I never imagined, not in my wildest dreams, the enormous problems that we would uncover along the way. The crisis of opiate and heroin addiction did not begin in Vermont, but Vermont began the national conversation about how to do it better. We invented hub and spoke, invested in state-of-the-art treatment centers that I'm incredibly proud of, and there's one just about to open in St. Albans, implemented pre-trial services, passed out rescue kits to anyone who would take them, and we saved hundreds and hundreds of lives that we otherwise would have lost, and adopted the toughest limits on prescribing OxyContin and other pain medications in the nation. Most importantly, we got rid of the stigma for the disease so that you can hold your head high and head into recovery. And you know what? Incarceration rates in this state are at the lowest level since the early 2000s. Vermont has almost 600 fewer inmates today than we did in 2010. 600 folks who aren't locked up at anywhere from $50,000 to $65,000 a year. That's tens of millions of dollars each year that Vermonters aren't wasting on prison cells. That's something to be proud of. And we delivered on the rest of the promise, becoming the first state in America, the first state, to enact universal pre-K for all 3- and 4-year-olds. We made it so more kids could access free school meals, so no kid has to try to learn hungry, because that's impossible. You can't learn on an empty stomach. Thousands and thousands of Vermont high school kids have gotten a free head start on college through expanded dual enrollment and early college programs. Personalized learning plans, they were controversial at the time, are ensuring that every student links choices in their educational journey to a meaningful career down the road so that we'll have a great workforce in this state going forward. My Step Up program to help those Vermonters already in the workforce in low-wage jobs get back into school and on the road to success is funded and enrolling more Vermonters as we speak. And together, we passed a once-in-a-generation reform bill to improve our educational quality and find efficiencies in our system that would have never happened without the leadership of Shap Smith. Thank you, Shap. Working from the ground up, today, well over half of Vermont kids are in a school district that has either decided to streamline or is in a conversation to do so. Over half of Vermont's kids, that's progress on a tough issue that has been plaguing us for years. Congratulations. Now, Vermont has chosen education for all over incarceration for too many. That is change whose time has come. On health care, while we didn't accomplish all of our goals, over 25,000 Vermonters who didn't have health insurance when I became governor do now, meaning that they no longer have to worry that one serious illness or accident could send them into bankruptcy. That's where they were living before. Thanks to our embracing of Obamacare, Vermont's uninsured rate is a nationwide low of 2.7%. That's virtually universal coverage. Congratulations. And after persistent challenges, headaches, and pain, Vermont Health Connect is functioning well. This open enrollment season, the annual transition of Vermonters from one year's plan to the next, which took us almost 12 months the first time we tried this, occurred with over 99% success rate at the push of a button. That matters. In November, 95% of requested change of circumstance, and I don't need to explain to any Vermonter what change of circumstance is, because we've been there. They were completed in time to be reflected in the customer's next bill, up from 54% at the beginning of this year, 95%. And 9 out of 10 calls, and we had huge waiting lines at the call centers that you know, as you know in the early days, to the customer support center were answered within 24 seconds. I'd love to get that service from my bank. With the creation of the Green Mountain Care Board, we've kept the growth of hospital budgets to the lowest levels in 40 years. And the all-payer model is the single best shot. It's the single best shot that we have, or any other state has in America, to controlling health care costs, which is what's made it so tough to get ahead financially for Vermonters and Vermont businesses. By paying doctors and hospitals to keep us healthy rather than for the quantity of care, Vermonters will be healthier, and so will their pocketbooks. Stick with it. It will make a difference. It was just 7 years ago, marriage equality passed. And you know, it never would have passed had it not been for many in this chamber and some who are no longer here, who came together to overcome outdated opposition to a moral imperative. When we came down on the right side of history, first state to do so legislatively, and overrode a gubernatorial veto, that was a moment of courage, and it was heard across America. In the 6 years in which I have had the privilege of being your governor, Vermont has not shied away from continuing the tradition of being among the first to do things right. Terminally ill patients can now make their end-of-life choices as they should be able to. Thank you. And I'll diverge from my text with my mom and my brother and my sister and my family here to say that in my wildest dreams when I signed that bill, I never thought that my own dad, who was suffering from a miserable terminal cancer, would be able to die with dignity in his own state. So thank you from my family. In an era where voter suppression has become a legitimate tactic to win elections in other states, Vermont will now automatically register voters and offer same-day voter registration, the way democracy should work. And, of course, there was Vermont's first-in-a-nation GMO labeling law that so many of you worked so hard for. While Congress stepped in with a weakened Washington, D.C. special compromise, I firmly believe that our setback was America's step forward. While we must fight a flawed national labeling standard, it is still a national labeling standard, and you all can fight to make it right. Let's do that together. Now, with all that we've accomplished, there are some areas where we've got to keep pushing, even though I won't be here as your governor to help. In the last year, Vermont has seen an almost 30% decline in homelessness. Thanks in part to establishing a goal to end family homelessness by 2020. We need to keep our foot to the pedal to make sure that that goal becomes a reality. We can do it. Although we've made progress on opiate addiction, Big Pharma is still giving more money to politicians all over this country to influence public policy in America. A Washington Post investigative series that I urge all of you to read recently detailed how high-level Justice Department officials called off multiple DEA efforts to halt shipments of opiates to illegal pill mills after pressure came in from Big Pharma. That's right. That's your government in Washington. Unbelievably, Congress then amended laws to make it almost impossible to halt the shipments to illegal pill mills in the future. The DEA's top cop on the beat got removed from his position, while Big Pharma simultaneously hired 42 retired DEA officials to help them keep the FDA-approved painkillers flowing freely to their profit mills. That's what they've done. Big Pharma doesn't just profit from the sale of painkillers. No, you know this. They profit from the pills to reduce constipation caused by the painkillers that they've invented. They profit from the medications that you need after you sign up for the disease in our treatment centers. They profit from the rescue kits that we pay so much money for to save people from dying in our streets. In recent years, I've often felt like a lone voice in a forest calling out Big Pharma nationally for these practices that are creating the opiate crisis in America, make no mistake about it. I can't think of a current governor who's likely to keep calling them out. Vermont has continually stood up to Big Pharma in the past, and I call upon you to keep up the fight now more than ever, or we will continue to see our sons, our daughters, and our neighbors die or have their lives destroyed by this self-inflicted crisis. Keep it up. Keep it up, Vermont. We also have more work to do to realize the promise of a cleaner lake and a more livable planet. You know, we're entering an era where the EPA, I don't need to remind you, the Department of Energy, and the State Department are going to be under the sway of climate skeptics, to be subtle, which isn't my specialty. But let's be clear. When we said that we were going to clean up our lake, when we said we were going to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, we didn't do that for the benefit of the federal government. We passed the toughest clean water law in the history of the state of Vermont. We passed our renewable energy plan for our future, for our children, for our grandchildren. I'm counting, we're counting on you to complete the job with your vigilance. We need to meet the requirements of the TMDL, and we got to keep our green energy revolution moving forward. Please do it. You know as well as I that Vermont is always at its best when other parts of our country are at their worst. When slavery was written into the federal Constitution, Vermont was the first to exclude it from ours. When gay and lesbian Americans were being discriminated against nationwide, Vermont was the first to say, "Love is love, team. Love is love." When women and children fleeing unimaginable violence in Syria were turned away by so many other states, Mayor Loris and I made sure Vermont would never close its doors to those looking for a better life. Today, America needs us more than ever. More than ever. We're entering an era of narrow, outdated ways of thinking, emboldened by a divisive and contemptuous president-elect. In the face of such a future, it can be tempting to disengage from the national politics of our time, to sit back on the progress that we've all made together, simply enjoy the beauty that surrounds the best state in the nation, and rejoice in the fact that our little state isn't like the rest of America. But guess what, team? We can't do that. We cannot do that. Our nation has stumbled backwards, and America needs Vermont's leadership now more than ever. That's going to require all of you to keep up the fight and turn a momentary stumble backwards into an inspiring leap forward. Vermont must always stand up against hatred, against bigotry, against intolerance that will sadly be part of our future. Tomorrow, I will no longer be your governor, but I will be a Vermonter demanding that my government stand firm for the values that make this state what it has always been. Given what I know to be true about the state that I love so much, I'm confident that I won't be the only one. That's why I'm leaving this chamber today with the same enthusiasm, hope, and optimism that I had 30 years ago when I first arrived. Farewell and thank you.